You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News. And today it is Monday of Draft Lottery Week, one of the biggest weeks, days, whatever you want to call it, for the Indiana Pacers franchise in a very long time. A chance to have a top one, two, three, four, whatever you draw your line at for this draft class pick. A huge day coming up Tuesday for the Indiana Pacers. We're going to kick off Draft Lottery Week by talking about who some and many, including me and my guest today, have tabbed as the best prospect in the 2022 NBA Draft. Paolo Banchero from Duke joining me to do that. You might know him, listener, from Indy Cornrows. I know him from working for the WNBA, his Tag the Roll podcast with Jake Rosen, breaking down all these prospects. Basketball News, The Athletic's Daily Ding, NBA show, Mark Schindler. Mark, how you doing? Are you loving this draft cycle? How the heck do you do all this? I have several questions.
That's a great question, man. My dog asked me the same thing too. It's been a very busy this month with the playoffs, and everything has been like throwing everything together. It's been a lot, but we're grinding through. It helps that I started the draft cycle like as soon as it started. Like this is like my first year like fully doing everything right off rip, so I feel really confident with where I'm at with it. But like you mentioned, like this draft cycle is so weird. And I mean, that's why it makes me excited to talk about Paolo, because he's one of the guys that I feel like most confident in where this cycle is at. But yeah, man, it is it's been a season for sure.
I have a good feel for Paolo because I watched a lot of Duke because I love AJ Griffin, which is separate from this. But he just like this draft class, even all the good players have warts that are like really obvious. And Paolo does too, but there's less. Hello, Moose walking around.
Yeah.
Paolo has less in a way that makes me really confident both in his floor and ceiling, which in this draft, a lot of guys like I did Dyson Daniels on Friday, really obvious floor, good defender. The ceiling, I'm kind of like, maybe won't be that good. And there's other guys like Chet where you're like, oh my God, the ceiling is incredible. But the floor is like, oh man, you know, if some stuff doesn't click here, it's not going to be great. Paolo is the perfect, like both are good to me. And that's what makes him so appealing as a process. So you can peg your own words in here, whatever you think. But to me, the thing that makes him so advanced is his kind of technical footwork and ability to kind of operate 15 feet and in, whether that's as a passer, as a guy creating his own shot in that space, just a guy connecting everybody. His footwork and mechanics are so good in that distance, and that kind of opens up every single thing he does at such a high level on the offensive end.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're putting it all together right there. Like I wrote something after they played Texas Tech in the Elite Eight, like when Duke did, and I thought that was maybe the best prospect game of the cycle. Duke really struggled in the first half with that no middle defense, and then they went and started operating like pretty much strictly out of elevator screens, which is not something you're going to be used to seeing very often. But everything was setting up for Paolo to get the ball and operate because they were really struggling with the ball on the inside. And I think you saw in that game his ability to both create on his own, but also to toggle on and off the ball. And I thought that was something that was really important to note. Like that really came along throughout the year. Like I think there were some moments earlier in the year where his processing speed was pretty low. Like you didn't really see some of the flashes that you were hoping to. But also worth noting, like he had a real, and this goes for a lot of draft class, but he had a really odd kind of path getting to college with not really getting to play high school basketball. There was no really AAU or anything because of how the pandemic went. So you saw him really catch up as the season went on, especially in ACC play. And like that Tech game, like, okay, like you mentioned with the technicality, if he gets a face up drive from the top of the key, he goes in, gets doubled. As soon as he gets to his spin, the ball's popping. Like he knows where it's going. It's not like Luka shit or anything like that, but like, it's very much a, like, I am extremely skilled. I'm extremely technical. I have a great handle at my size. I can get to where I want. And if you stop me, I'm moving the ball to another place that's going to hurt you. And like you mentioned with AJ Griffin, I think you saw him as a beneficiary of that a lot. So I think, especially just from a Pacers point of view, I look at Paolo as like the clear one of one for me in this draft class. Like, who is, I mean, like you could say David West, but like who at the four spot has had at this much skill and ability to be a positive in this way. Like, and no shade to David, but like even then he's like 33 when he's a Pacer. So it's like there's just never really been a guy with the ability to operate outside in and inside out like this on the Pacers like ever. So
who actually has had this impact at the fort? Nobody. Who should have? Yeah. Paul George.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fair. All right, Larry.
But he would not play the four. He would barely even play the three. Damn it. He
CJ
would
Miles.
Play the two. Yeah,
CJ Miles.
Yeah. CJ Miles. Are. If we're comping to CJ Miles, we've already lost the sauce.
Here. Yeah.
So the note I had about his passing, I just put darts for simple passes because, like, you brought up Luka, and Luka, like, throws dudes open and is, like, brilliant and stuff. Like, Banchero's not doing that, and this isn't a knock, but, like, if he sees a dude in the opposite corner, it's, like, whip, right on time, bam, shooting pocket. So it's, like, you know, that's a simple pass. Like, a lot of NBA dudes can make it, but not that quickly or that accurately or at the read timing he does. So he's still a good passer. I'm just not like, oh, he's you know, he's going to mid-spin move, like dime up a dude under the basket. His best passing trait to me, and some of this is just that he played with Mark Williams, who just sticks his arm up and he's the tallest dude on the court. But like when he's in like 10 feet away from the basket, he's really good at like, oh, I can get it to the other block really easily for that dude to score because he's like drawing two defenders or just he's patient with a read or he shot fakes or something. And that's a really hard pass to make, like those kind of tight interior passes. But he probably had two or three assists like that almost every game. And that allowed him to be a creator right around the basket, even when he was cut off by so many guys who were trying to, you know, shut down AJ Griffin or whatever random dude guard was having a big game that day, which every game is a random different dude, Roach or Keeler or whoever. So, you know, that is where his passing sticks out to me, and the footwork, like we talked about, allows him to do that. And you know, it's just so interesting how he's so good at manufacturing those angles because, you know, when he actually is like trying to attack from the perimeter, he's going to do a spin move. Like he's kind of not one trick pony. This is kind of a negative. We'll get to this in a second. But, you know, that's not where he's as good. It's when he, you know, pops to 15 feet or even rolls to 15 feet. He barely dives all the way to the basket and he catches. That's where he's kind of good at creating both his own shot and for others. And that little inside angle pass is so impressive. He's a good finisher. Like that's where I really like his game is that he's not like old school, but he's both a combo of face up and creating stuff inside that you don't really see from prospects very often.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to put it. Like, versatility can sometimes be a, like, thrown around too much. And also, like, sometimes being so versatile means that you're just not very good at something and you're just okay at a lot of things. But, like, with Paolo, I think what makes him special is that he's good at a lot of things. Like you mentioned, like, I don't think that, like, I mean, he definitely has elite traits, but, like, what makes him special is his ability to be at the four spot. Like, he's too strong for most threes and even for a lot of fours, he's too strong. And his handle is too good to keep up with most fives. Like he really is just able to attack front courts in a lot of ways that I don't even think we saw fully at Duke because I don't, to be frank, I didn't love their offense a ton.
A college team with a boring offer?
Well, yeah, exactly. What? But like, I mean, he only shot 33.8% from three at Duke, but I think that kind of underlies where I'm at with his shot. Like, I think it's going to be a lot better than that in the NBA. He did a lot of stuff, you know, like very versatile self-created looks. He showed some stuff out of, out of pick and roll, even taking threes out of there, showing his ability to handle from there as well, which again, that's more stuff I want to see at the next level that I don't think we got to see as much at Duke. But like seeing him as a popper, like, you know, just getting to see him do more stuff as a screener, we didn't really get to see that a ton either. And like, what can you do as a DHO threat? Like, what can you do as a short roller? Like, there's a lot more stuff that I don't even think we've quite seen with him yet that is really intriguing to me and exciting, you know, moving towards the next level.
In terms of the defensive end, the way I would sum up the reason he's a positive on defense has little to do with any – he is skilled on defense. We'll get to that. But the reason to me he's a positive on the defensive end is that he is 250 pounds and fast.
Yes.
Like, he can just guard like – this is a college situation, right? In the pros, this is not as much of an advantage, although, again, there's not that many 250-pound dudes in the NBA. Like – he can basically just guard anyone, not anyone, but most dudes, because he's huge and fast, right? So that's such a low-level way of describing it. But when you're 6'10", can keep up with anyone and can't get bodied off your spot, like, you can play good defense. And it's weird because I was watching, you know, the Clemson game sticks out to me as one in my notes here. By the way, in that game, Trevor Booker jersey retirement, ex-Pacer, deserves a shout-out on today.
That's so random. I forgot that happened.
So random. I had to type it down. I was like, oh, Trevor Booker's on my YouTube right now. In that game, like, you know, he guards a pick and roll, and he'll skirt out, and then he'll just kind of roam. around on defense. So his defense is weird because he's so physically imposing that he's good at it, but sometimes I'm kind of like, what are you doing? So I think his defense is a positive, but his defense is certainly weird for me to evaluate because on the ball, great, but like as soon as he's not involved in the action or the play, I'm kind of like, does he know what he's supposed to be doing? Is this what he's being asked to do? It's like, it's so different the way he roams that I kind of wasn't sure if he was doing it on purpose or if this is what Duke really wanted him to do.
Yeah, another, talking about college teams, this Duke team defensively was like pretty much Mark Williams and a prayer. Like they were like Wendell yes. Moore was not like he was okay on the ball, but his off-ball defense was pretty rough. AJ Griffin had a lot of inconsistencies on defense, I think is the kind of way to put it. With Powell, I think to me, like I haven't watched as much of his stuff pre-college, but just talking to scouts who have followed his game since he first started coming up in Washington, like he first came about as a defense first prospect, like especially like if you I'll have to send you some of his stuff, like going back and watching some of the AU tape, like he was like a generational rim protector at, you know, like 2 or 3 years ago. And that was like a big sell for him. And then he became more of this like ISO and post up guy who is creating, like that's been more of a recent development. So I think I'm like less worried about it. Like when I watch him, I think kind of what you're getting at too, I haven't totally agreed with some of the criticism of him this year. Like, oh, is he laterally quick enough? I'm like, I just think that he kind of half-asses it on defense, if we're being completely honest. Like very much so, like I mean, the dude averaged almost 20 and 10 this year as a 19-year-old. Like I can kind of understand why he was half-assing it a little bit on defense. Like if you're that good, I'm not trying to create excuses, but like we've seen this happen time and time again of a guy who is just like physically dominant and doesn't necessarily have all the little things ironed out or always put full effort in on defense. And I think that's something that's going to change at the next level for sure. Like if the effort is a problem in the NBA, that's one thing, but I just don't really think that's going to be an issue. Like, do I ever think he's going to be like a significant plus-plus? Probably not. Like he's not the longest guy, but I do think he's shown really good help instincts, you know, coming weak side. Like, no, he's not going to average 6 blocks a game, but I think he's like you mentioned, he's 6'10". Like he's 6'10", 250, and moves well. Like, no, he's not going to be a switch everything guy, but I think he's going to have some scheme versatility and just be impactful. Like I'm right there with you.
Yeah, his defense will be interesting to track at the NBA level. The last thing I want to bring up in this positives section is one specific game that has me a little like interested in his playmaking at the pro level. Syracuse. Evaluating prospects against Syracuse sometimes is a giant waste of time because they're playing this goofy zone, and it's like you'll never see a guy in this situation ever in the pro level, or rarely. Zone is becoming a little more popular. That said, he was the dude flashing middle that whole game, and they were up 31-9 at one point. They destroyed the poor Boeheims that night, Duke did. And he was creating some awesome passes from the middle, and when he would roam out to the corner, I think he hit 4 threes in that game. I don't have it in front of me anymore, but like that was a game where I was like, okay, you know, if he's in a situation where he has a favorable playmaking situation, like he can do it. You know, he's got the reads and the shooting to be really good at that kind of stuff. So that like that kind of put the whole package together for me. I hate that it was a Syracuse game, but like that he can kind of do it kind of all. Like he's pretty good at everything. I think you kind of said that, or like can be good enough at everything that I think his floor is really high at the NBA level. But now, Mark, we have to do it. We got to talk about some of his weaknesses because no prospect is perfect, especially in this weird draft class. Hey guys, short little break here to talk about the great folks over at Sakara. Feeling your best starts with what you eat, and Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. Now is the time to seek wellness, joy, and abundance in all areas of your life, starting with what you eat. With Sakara, you get nutrition-dense meals, snacks, and supplements that nourish your body without sacrificing taste or quality. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Their nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients, helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. And it's delivered right to your door, ready to eat. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off your first order when they go to Sakara.com/locked20 or enter the code locked20 at checkout. And that's Sakara, Sakara.com/locked20 to get 20% off your first order. Sakara.com/locked20. So, weaknesses. Paolo Banchero. something we talked about earlier as a strength is also kind of a weakness, and that is that he loves this dang spin move. And they played Virginia, and Tony Bennett was like, oh, I know he's going to spin every time. So they would just send two guys to him right before he spun, and then he would either turn it over or didn't know what to do or had to pass. And he is obsessed with that one move, and he's a decent isolation player, but not, like, amazing. So he's so into that spin and not really, like, varied in his moves enough that he kind of gets turnover prone. He kind of gets his head down on those kind of driving situations. And I think his isolation gives leaves me with a little bit more to be desired in those situations.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of great points. What makes me probably a little bit higher on it is probably, like you mentioned at the beginning, like his footwork and his explosiveness is just so hard to get away from. Like, I think I'm just pretty confident in somebody who has those skills and the handle that he's shown being able to, like, it's going to take time for sure, but becoming somebody who really develops those counters and becomes an excellent isolation player. But I mean, you're totally right. And that's stuff we've seen in the playoffs routinely, like even just talking about the WNBA, like watching the Storm and Mercury play that yesterday, like, okay, they just cross matched, helped off and sent two to the ball all the time. And like, that's stuff that I think Powell is going to see in the NBA for sure, especially if he's on a team with some lesser talent and he's getting the ball as much as we think he will. Like, yeah, he's going to have to rep that stuff out. But I also think that's part of like, that's just part of him being a prospect and figuring out his game for sure.
Yeah, when he, like, it's, like, weird. He almost is better catching, like, with his back turned. Because then he doesn't think about the spin. He thinks about using his footwork better. And so, I agree with you. He'll get the counters. He's got enough inside 10-foot finishing ability. Like, shot, again, above 70% at the rim. Pretty good inside 10 feet. Baseline jumpers were good. Like, he's got enough sauce and finishing ability to have those counters or floaters eventually to the point where he will just be able to like lower his shoulder and create enough space to score. So I'm not worried about it. I just wish he had a little more variation and timing and wasn't just going bust every time two came to the ball before he got to the elbow, and especially against a not good Virginia team. Like, Tony Bennett's a genius, but like, that was not a good team.
That was a pretty rough Virginia
team. One of my things I do a lot with, especially with high-level prospects, I think I told you this in past cycles. Like, I watch a really good game they had and a really bad game they had, mm-hmm. and I say, okay, what was different? What caused this guy to suck in this game? He's 2-for-13 against Virginia, and that was it. They just sent two to him right after his first dribble all the time, and he passed okay that game, and he was 10 rebounds. Like, he still was good and impactful and stuff, but that kind of turned me off a little bit to that particular part of his game where I'm like, oh, you know, there is a counter for what he can do well or what he likes to do well, and he spins so much it's like almost
he does love that.
Who was that running back who was just like, you hit the spin move in Madden and he would score a touchdown every time?
I think it was Warrick Dunn. Same, like, if you did anything historical with Barry Sanders, it's just money if you hit the circle button. So
I had Madden 04 was the first football game I had, and Warrick Dunn and Mike Vick in the same backfield. Everybody would just use them and hold the sprint button down, and Warrick Dunn's spin move was filthy in that game. That's Bancaro. He is loving that spin move button. Speaking of turnovers, they're not bad. I don't want to be like, oh, he's turnover prone, or like, oh, he's rushing things or anything like that. But especially in transition, it's weird that he's not a little better in transition given the rest of his skills. But he's like almost head down in transition, so he does turn it over a little too much for my liking. That is usually something that happens when you're a primary creator in college, but a little turnover prone. I would like to see a little more there. His handle's not loose. It's not like his passing is bad. We talked about that earlier. Just occasionally coughs it up in ways that are not Bancaro-esque, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because like you mentioned, like sometimes the head down stuff, like he's definitely a pretty high fuel player, but like you mentioned, like he has moments where like you can totally tell that this guy just worked out in a gym for 9 months when he wasn't able to play. Like just his game feels very segmented and mechanical. And I think he repped out a lot of that as the year went on. But also, like, yeah, it was still very apparent at times. Like, especially like I mentioned, that Texas Tech game, I thought you saw a lot of what it looked like at its best. Like, even when he was doing that spin move, if he was getting walled off, the ball's popping quicker. But it's still something that you're gonna want to see more of. And like that's part of what makes him not to say that he's like a bad number one overall prospect. I think that gets like said too much, but like this is why like he probably wouldn't be the number one pick in last year's draft. Like he's not like he's a very good passer and playmaker, especially for his size. But like in terms of somebody who's going to be the engine of your offense, I'm not quite there. And I think he can be somebody who's like the top scorer on your offense. Like that's a big reason for why you're buying into him as a player. But exactly, like I think there's definitely some stuff to be desired for sure for him as a playmaker.
The unfortunate part of last year's draft is that it was so good that that's not an insult at all.
Yep.
Last year. 2019, you know, Zion and Morant, you're going before him. 2020 is a more interesting one. Like Ant, Wiseman, LaMelo. I would have picked LaMelo one that year. I would not have picked Bankero over LaMelo, but pretty much anyone else in that draft, I think I would have taken him over at this stage of this process. Can I ask you a question? I don't know how much interviews of Bankero you've read or interviews you've watched of him or whatever. Has he ever mentioned Carmelo Anthony as a player that he watches film of? Or can you recall?
I gotta be honest.
You know where I'm going with this?
I get what you're saying, but I don't think I've ever seen him mention Carmelo before.
The number of times Bankero catches and jabs two or three times, he doesn't – like, Melo shoots out of those a lot. He did sometimes. But I I'm counting this as a weakness, even though it's not like a problem. It's just something he did. Like, sometimes he would try to create by just, like, jabbing in place a few times and not really doing anything, and it just wasted time. And I don't get what that skill does or what the point of it is or why you do it, unless you're going to be Melo where you use it to make them back off like 6 centimeters and then just shoot over that space. But he didn't do that much. Sometimes he did shoot over that space, but not that much. So that was a weird thing that he did. I just didn't know if he was like a Melo guy at all. But that's not like a negative. I just wanted to...
No. I mean, that's a really interesting point to bring up. Like, I think a lot of it's like, what is the process going to be like for him at the next level? Like, if that's something that he's going to do all the time, I'd be like, But I do think, like, again, as the year went on, like, I think he did more of, like, okay, I'm going to jab and then get you going on your back foot and going somewhere. Because, like you mentioned, I think even though it was, like, kind of frustrating out of sometimes, I think that he got a lot better at getting downhill and just, like, I'm going to get my head down and go to the basket. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, you know, like, why doesn't he do this every play? Like, it's hard to do that every play. Like, same thing with the Giannis discourse. Like, I know the threes are annoying. I'm very averse to Giannis threes too, but like there's a reason you take pull-ups from two. Like, even if it's not perfect, like you have to have counters built in. Even if it's not super efficient, like it's important to have things that are like kind of jabs a little bit to keep the defense guessing and thinking. And seeing how he develops that out is going to be very important in the NBA.
Ironically, you say that. If he shot it off of the jabs more, I actually think they'd be more valuable, because then dudes would think he was going to shoot and actually think about it instead of just like taking one step back and be like, all right, he's going to dribble at me in a second or pass. Like, it didn't do anything. That's what made it so weird. You're right. Like, when Giannis takes that weird pull-up 15-footer in the second quarter of every game, now that's in the defender's head. Like, oh, he could shoot the whole rest of the game, even though he's probably not going to. Right? Like, that matters, that they have to think in that moment. Like, what's he going to do? Even though they're locked in and most likely not thinking that way in the playoff setting. But, like, that matters to me. So that the last thing here I have on the defensive stuff, we talked about the roaming a little bit, and just in general, his pick and roll defense. Look, if you're in the NBA and you're 6'10", you're probably going to be playing some center a little bit. You're going to play the four set screens now. Everybody sets screens now, actually. Everybody is a screener or a roller, right? You're going to be involved in these actions a lot in the NBA. Look, playing at Duke, you mentioned it. Their defense was just like, all right, we're going to shadow you to the side so you're driving at Mark Williams or towards Mark Williams, or they're kind of a no-middle team, but also not because Mark Williams was on their team. Whatever. It was weird, and Bankero defending the pick and roll most of the time, in fact, I would say above 95% of the time, was defending the screener, and he sags off pretty far in those, and he's quick enough to recover sometimes, but I did not think his pick and roll defense was like a strength in his game. And so for a guy that has size and speed, yeah, he can recover, and he's big enough to stay with his guy, and his on-ball defense is still good. I view him as a guy who will be probably a positive-ish defender in the NBA. But I was concerned that the most common action he'll face at the pro level, I didn't come away with this thinking, oh, this is going to be a strength for him defending this action.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. Like, a lot is going to be, again, like we mentioned, engagement earlier, but also finding, like you mentioned, like finding your space as a defender is going to be really important. Like, I don't really view him as like a switch everything guy. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to switch some actions for sure. But like, I think he's going to be more like, what does he look like playing at the level? How good can he get with hand play? Because I think he does have really good hands. Like, averaged a little bit over a steal a game. And I think it's going to be more like, okay, how can I work on, while I'm not necessarily like the quickest guy, I still think the lateral quickness isn't necessarily something I would consider a weakness. Like, just improving the footwork on defense, because like you mentioned too, like, as good as the footwork is on offense, it needs to be a lot better on defense. Just improving slides. It's more like, it's less about getting stops to me and more about just like elongating possessions. Like, I think sometimes we make defense too much about like, oh, well, is this guy going to get a stop here? I'm like, I think it's more about like, are you actually preventing something from happening for long enough where help can force things to force an action to have to start again or force like something else to happen in the offense. Like, I think it's more about like the mini stops that happen before an actual stop can happen and the process of it. I think watching Miles Turner, I think is almost an unfair way to put it, but like Miles coming in was not a good pick and roll defender.
That's
like
true.
It took him a long time. Like, I mean, we took what, like probably 3 or 4 years before he was a really solid pick and roll defender. Like, I think that's always a good way to look at it. Like, it's hard to consider Paolo a big because of all of the wingy things he does, but he is, like, by definition, defensively, he's going to be a big. It's going to take him time to become a better pick and roll defender. I think, you know, we just typically see guys, it takes a while to be good at that. Like, there are some guys, like, obviously, Evan Mobley's an alien. For the most part, like, it's going to take guys a lot of time to get better at playing as a big in some of those actions.
That's my Chet alert. Like, that's why I'm going to have Chet too. Like, I think he can – not like Mobley was a freak, like, day one defending everything. But, like, he's going to be a pretty good pick-and-roll defender, like, in his rookie year. He's skinny. He'll get bullied and a lot of stuff. But, like, I'm like, damn, like, that is going to be really valuable at the NBA level. All right. The NBA fit stuff with Banchero. I think it's really good, but we got to discuss it. Paolo Banchero at the NBA and potentially the Pacers level. One more break here, guys, to talk about the good folks over at Built Bar, who have a new birthday cake puffs flavor that is absolutely amazing. Imagine dipping your finger into that plastic tub of birthday cake frosting, opening your eyes, and realizing you just ate only 150 calories and 16 grams of protein. That is what it's like to eat these new birthday cake puffs from Built Bar. I have a bunch of them, I think 18 of them now, and I absolutely love them. And they might not be there forever. They might be a limited time flavor, so you got to go get them from Built.com. What is Built Bar? They're 100% covered in real chocolate protein bars that come in so many awesome flavors. So something for everybody before this birthday cake puff kind. My favorite was the peanut butter brownie, but they have a bunch of flavors, a mixed box where you can try a bunch of their most popular ones. And the best part is they're all really healthy. Most of them have, you can see all the macros right on their website, but most of them have, you know, about 150 calories, a bunch of protein, low sugar. They're great for the health conscious guy. The birthday cake puff one, for example, 150 calories, 16 grams of protein, only 9 grams of sugar. You've got to try them. Whatever flavor you want, the mixed box, the birthday cake puff, whatever you want, go to Built.com. Use the code LOCKED15 when you check out. You'll get 15% off your order. That promo code again is LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. So here's the problem with college basketball as it relates to having guys, analyzing guys at the NBA level. There's no spacing. There's always someone under the basket or someone in the dunker spot. It's harder to drive. It's harder to finish. And that's what made Banchero's little interior passes look so good and so valuable. It makes it obvious he can read the game. But for a guy with really good technical footwork, a good ability to read the game, a bunch of size, good pacing, doesn't ever really get sped up, I think Banchero, it may be, maybe, I'd have to think about it with a few of these other guys, but I think there's a chance of the top 4 to 5 guys, he's the best natural NBA fit of all of them. Maybe Ivy, but I think it's Banchero.
I would agree. I think it's Banchero by a decent degree for me. Like, there are some things with Ivy where I'm not sure. Like, I think that a lot of the question would be, you know, if you're bringing in Ivy, Tyrese next to him might maximize Ivy, but how does Ivy maximize Tyrese is a great question.
Yeah, the Pacer stuff with Ivy is interesting. I haven't done him yet, so I'll have to figure that out.
Okay. But with Paolo, like, I think I look at Paolo, and I think that him and Tyrese could have just incredible synergy together. Like, getting somebody who's a really dynamic, like, at least the way I envision him and his skill set, like, a really dynamic screener and somebody who can do a lot of things that make it even harder to guard Tyrese. Because I think, you know, looking at this Pacers team, I guess a lot of it comes down to, you know, like, my biggest question for this next season is what happens with Haliburton. Obviously, like, you know, does he take that step forward? Is becoming more of a primary option and trying to soak up more usage and being more, a little bit more aggressive offensively. And I think a lot of it too is like, how does the organization view him? Because I think we're not entirely sure of that sometimes. But like adding somebody like Paolo who brings out, I think like his skill set could really bring out even more of those qualities in Tyrese would be extremely exciting to me from the NBA fit standpoint. And like, not even like, I don't think Tyrese would even have to be the number one scorer. Like, I think Paolo to me is like clearly going to be the number one scorer on whatever team he's on for the most part. Like, obviously there are ways where he becomes more of like a 2 or 3 guy, but on this team, yeah, I totally see that.
We will learn a lot about how the Pacers really feel about Hallie in the next couple months. Like, after the deadline, Pritchard's like, yeah, this dude's a genius. We love him. He's great. He's a sick young point guard. We love him. And I agree. I think he's the best player on the team. And then they're like, okay, he's shooting 10 times a game. Like, yep. Hey, hang on a second. I thought this guy was... So I think that maybe they don't move on from some of these other guards. I'm not using names specifically. Everybody knows what guys I'm talking about. There's two mainly. You know, then I think they're kind of still viewing him in a little bit of a growth mode, not as a, like, the guy mode, even though it seemed like they were talking about him as the guy.
Exactly. Like, I have so many questions. Like,
yeah, I do too. We'll learn a lot. Like, last year was the weirdest year in terms of everything the Pacers said made sense, like, from every key guy who spoke, whoever it was. It all made sense. And then a lot of times, almost all the time, on the court, I was like, that's not what they said.
Exactly. It was very, yeah. It was
not that, and neither. I guess they won 25 games, so the court part was by definition bad. But none of it was like process wise. I was like, oh, this is wrong. They're making the wrong choice or saying the wrong thing. It's just like, oh, it didn't really match that. Didn't really match that well in your head, which makes it kind of hard to kind of cut through what they're really thinking. And we will learn a lot about this team in the coming months. That said, Bankero, I agree with the Pacers specifically. Very good fit. Very good scoring fit on a spaced out team. If Miles is still on the team, that would alleviate a lot of his defensive pick and roll kind of jazz he's got to deal with. He knows how to defend when he's got a guy like Mark Williams / Miles Turner behind him waiting at the basket, if they can find a way to have Miles Turner camp around the rim in a spaced out NBA. So I like his fit with the Pacers, especially offensively with Haliburton, especially too because I was actually watching some Haliburton interviews yesterday for no reason to explain, but you know, something he talks about a lot is like transition play, both in terms of something he's good at and something that the Pacers need to get better on defense so they can be in transition more. And we talked about Bankero earlier, like one of his weaknesses in transition, he's very like, I have the ball, head down, I'm going to try to do something. If Haliburton's got the ball and all he's got to do is run up the floor, get to a spot, like that's going to alleviate one of my biggest warts in Bankero's game, especially offensively. It's like, oh my God, this fit could be awesome, especially in half-court settings since they both have really unique skill sets in a way that could complement each other really well. So I'm very bullish on that fit in particular. And they've had a guy who can defend stronger wings. Let's see. Thad could do it kinda. And Bogdanovich sometimes could do it.
Bogdanovich in the playoffs, yeah.
Like, yeah, except not against
if he didn't
DeRozan.
Have to run through a screen.
Everybody but DeRozan, he did okay against. They thought Torrey Craig could do it, and he could kind of do it. And Justin Holiday did it for a couple games and then got old and couldn't do it. So for the whole Pritchard era, they've had a bunch of, like, mediocre at best options for these bigger wings. And they just get cooked by – I don't even care if you get cooked by, like, LeBron or Giannis or whatever. Like, those guys cook everybody. Like, whatever. They get cooked by, like, Hayward, OG Anunoby.
Getting cooked by Kelly Oubre is a problem.
Kelly Oubre, yeah. These guys are – like, their NBA players are good, but, like, they're all – killing you because you have no good matchup for them. Bankero is like, plug him in, done. Like, you did it. You got the guy to finally defend those guys. Not year one, but at some point. And that is huge, 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 huge for the development of this franchise, which, by the way, Mark, did you know? This last season was the first time they were in the bottom 10 in defensive rating on NBA.com's defensive rating since the 1990s. They've got to get better on that end of the floor. And I think Bankero being a perfect need fit and skill fit, because defending wings is so important in the NBA these days, is massive for his NBA growth and fit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I'm right there with you. This defense, what they did last year was just like, oh God, it was abhorrent in like every facet. And like the biggest thing, like you mentioned, I think it's weird because I agree. Like, I think Powell is going to do some things, especially as years go on what he can do defending. But I think it's going to be even more like, what do they do outside of their first round pick? Because I still just don't know how they get stops on the perimeter right now. Like, it was a question all year last year. I still don't know if we have an answer to that yet, but we'll see. I mean, like, theoretically, TJ Warren, but also that's like, who knows?
Duarte was okay.
Yeah, but like,
okay at it.
But like, exactly, like you asked Rick about this a ton in media availability about like defending bigger wings, and they just said, I mean, he routinely said it was more just like, oh, those guys score 40 everywhere. Like, yes, but also like, not like this. Like,
right.
It was such a big problem last year. So it's got to be an answer somewhere. There has to, like, whatever they do with their first overall pick, even if it isn't Powell, like, it has to do something to change the course of the defense because this is untenable.
There are a lot of like okay-ish guys at that size defensively at the pro level in this class. Fortunately for the Pacers, who need a forward, the top of this class, even if you extend the top to like 9, there are a lot of forwards. Like they could get a forward, but Bank is the best. Jabari's a good defender too. I don't know. There are good defensive forwards at the top of this draft class, which is nice. But Banchero, I keep calling him Bank. I don't know. No one has ever called him that. And I can't. If he's on the Pacers, I'm tweeting Banks open the second he banks in his first jumper.
Oh, that's
with
hilarious.
With a C instead of a K. Someone's going to steal that from me now. That's totally fine. But you know, I think he's just such a good NBA fit, though, because he can be a good defender or at least a serviceable defender at that really important thing. Like the Raptors just this year were like, you know what? We're going to get 8 of these guys who can defend this position, even if they're really flawed on offense or aren't that good at a lot of other stuff. Like, we could just throw bodies at big wings. And they're like, oh, hey, look at that. We're good on defense. Like, we made the playoffs. You know, it wasn't that simple for Toronto. Nick Nurse is, like, a genius. But that was a big part of their success this year, if they had the bodies to do that kind of stuff. And so, you know, Banchero plus other bodies eventually, like, that will help the Pacers have a solution in that area. I like his offensive fit you mentioned with Haliburton. But in general, especially if, you know, the shooting is interesting, like, the percentages are just good enough, and I'm like, he could be a good shooter. I don't know. Especially if he becomes a good shooter, like he is such – then he becomes such a good NBA fit because he can be awesome off ball and still that technical kind of brilliant guy on the ball. Then he becomes a perfect NBA fit. So the shooting is where it kind of the twisting point is for me on, like, he'll be a pretty good NBA fit with some warty stuff you got to figure out with him off the ball, or like, okay, you can just put him on any team and he's going to be perfect.
Yeah. I'm very much a believer in the shot. I think it all, you know, it depends on how you're looking at it.
It looks good. It looks good.
I'm there with it. And especially like we mentioned earlier, like off the versatility, I'm like, yeah, I see it. But I think the biggest thing, like you mentioned defensively, this is like another random aside, but I think especially looking at the front court, there are just so many guys who like can do some things defensively that are positive, but then there's just enough weak points everywhere else. Like even as good of a defender as O'Shea is off the ball, like, he is rough on the ball right now. Like, it's going to take, especially against, like we mentioned, like the bigger wings. Like, if you just have somebody like Powell or anybody who can be there and be like, okay, like that makes things so much easier for everyone else. But yeah, we're in the same boat there. I'm very excited to see how this falls out because I just want to know what this team is going to look like next year.
I am too. And I am really looking forward to seeing Banchero in the NBA because he is, I believe, I said this at the beginning, but I think he's both of our number one prospects.
Yes, he is.
With the lottery coming in. One day, everybody, one day, tomorrow's podcast, lottery preview. You're going to hear lots of percentages where the Pacers could end up, where other teams could end up. And as usual, one of my favorite segments that no one ever talks about, what the Pacers want to happen beyond themselves jumping up. For example, if the Cavs get another top four pick next to Evan Mobley and Darius Garland, the Pacers are screwed for a very long time. Those sorts of things I will be talking about on tomorrow's show. Mark, thank you very much for the time. Where can people follow you and your work covering every corner of the basketball world on planet Earth?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @MG_Schindler. That would be my biggest recommendation. I'm very, as you know, Tony, I'm very active there. All my stuff will be up there. I appreciate you having me on, man. It's always a blast to catch up.
It is always a blast. Again, lottery preview, lottery reactions. We'll do another prospect later this week. And of course, once their pick is settled in, I'll do my least favorite thing and talk about trade options for the Pacers in the draft at some point this week. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Have a great day, and we see you tomorrow.